So our goal today is to appreciate the experience of the Seder in a new light. And to do that, I want to reflect on a core theme that appears in the Seder. Parenthetically, before we get started, and we'll come back to this at the end, it's interesting to note when you talk about the Haggadah and the Seder, that of all books and all works in the Jewish tradition and Jewish history, I can't think of any one that has more commentaries and more published works than the Haggadah. Right? It's endless. Everybody and their grandmother, and in this case, literally everyone and their grandmother, is going to publish a Haggadah. And the question is why? So I want to keep that. Okay, good. So that's one of the pieces that we have to figure out. So I want to begin with what you have on page one, which is an observation about the beginning of the story about Moshe Rabbeinu, in which the Torah tells us, in which Moshe Rabbeinu is described in these very interesting terms. The Torah tells us that he refuses when Hashem says to him, please, you should take the Jewish people out of Egypt. He says, no, I'm not the right guy. Why am I not the right guy? So first he says, in the first underline on page one, Vein lo ya'aminu li, they won't listen to me. V'lo yishmu b'koli, and they won't hear in my voice. And then the second thing he tells them later, in Perek Dalet and Pasuk Yud, you know why they won't listen to you? Because ki kvad fe u'kvad lashon anochi. You know why? It's because I have a speech defect. And I ask myself the question, wait a second, why is it that Moshe Rabbeinu has a speech defect? Where did that come from? It's also interesting that it seems to have disappeared because the rest of the Torah, we don't hear so much about this speech defect. So there is a Yalkut Shimoni that says that in Matan Torah it disappeared. Well, was this a natural? Did he have speech therapy growing up in the house of Paro? What is the significance? And not just what is the significance, so the Maharal on the next page in the Gevurah Hashem, the Maharal struggles with this. He says, I don't understand at all. Yesh Lahakshos, right here in the beginning of Perek. Yesh Lahakshos, Moshe Shahoyelo Kola Milos. Moshe had every ability and every laudable quality. Va'af Shlemus Hagufaylo, he had wholeness of his body. Like he says, quotes a Medrash. So how could it be? How could it be that he ha'ech ha'yazesh lo ha'ya ishtvarim v'hu nechshav min ha'shlemos? Wholeness includes the ability to speak. If you take Rachmana Litzlan, a child, and they're 5-6 years old and they don't have the ability to speak, so you'd say that they have a significant disability. You'd get therapy for them, you'd have intervention. So says the Maharal, how could it be that Moshe Rabbeinu was the Adam HaSholim, the whole person, he had a speech defect? And to contrast this with the final question, the final observation, is the Haggadah on page 3. You have the entire Haggadah here in front of you, at least the first big chunk of it. And you'll notice in the underlines one verb, one theme that continues to appear in the context of the Haggadah. And what is that?
Lasaper, lemor.
Exactly, to speak, words. It's lasaper, it's lahagid, it's ve'amarta, it's onos al pi hadibur. So why is it that the concept of words and speech continuously appears on the night of the Seder? Why is that the central motif? So in addition to understanding why the Seder and the Haggadah are such ubiquitous phenomena, we want to understand what was the speech impediment that Moshe Rabbeinu had, and what is the speech that we're emphasizing at the Seder. So to do that, I want to share with you just an introductory note from an interesting book that I have at home. I picked it up somewhere, a used book, small volume by Rabbi Steinsaltz. It's called Simple Words. And the book is Kishmo Kenu. He just takes little words. It's like, I guess, imagine you invited Rev Steinsaltz to your living room for a schmooze, and you said, well, tell me about the word love. What does that mean? Or the word death. What does that mean? And he has just musings. It's beautiful. It's an interesting work. And he delves into the concept of words in his introduction, where he points out that mankind, as you see here on page 4, mankind can best be defined as the speaking species. He said, look, all creatures, dolphins and canines and all the different living creatures that you could think of, communicate in various ways. But none of them have the ability to speak. They don't have language in the way that we have language. And that's perhaps what the Unkelis means when it translates Vayhi Adam LeNefesh Chaya, the man was made into a living soul. Unkelis translates that as Ruach Memalala, a speaking spirit. So words are basic to the human experience. And on page 5, go to the next page, you can read the rest on your own. He points out that words convey important messages. They transmit, top of the next column, second column on page 5, he says, the gift of gab is useful. You transmit pictures, frames of mind, information, emotions. But we are not just, he says, we are not just users of words, we are their creators. We create words, and not only that, bottom of the column, words are vehicles, very powerful ones. And this is what we can suggest today, that the reason why the Haggadah is an evening that focuses on words, the Seder is all about words, is because words are powerful. And we can suggest three frames, three ways of understanding the concept of words to appreciate why they appear at the Seder. The first one is taught to us by a Mishnah in the beginning of the fifth parak in Pirkei Avos. Says the Mishnah, Ba'asara ma'amoros nivra ha'olam. The world was created with 10 statements. And the Bar Tanur here points out, based on the Gemara, if you count in the beginning of Bereishis, you'll find 9 vayomers, and the word Bereishis is number 10. This is mamish, one of the deepest, deepest teachings. We don't really understand what this means, at least I certainly don't. The mystical, deep levels of the secrets of creation, what that means, that Hashem Yisbarach spoke, but obviously he's trying to teach you something. And what is he teaching us? He's teaching us that speech is creative. Your words have the capacity to create. That's why the Rabbeinu Shalom used bedafka words, because that's the vehicle for creation. We have a tradition that you can learn something from everyone. There was in the 20th century, there was a pastor, a Christian minister. His name was Father Lawrence Lovasic, and he had the following observation. He said that kind words are a creative force, a power that concurs in the building up of all that is good, an energy that showers blessing upon the world. When you speak, you build. And it's not surprising then that the word daber is the same word as the word davar, thing. Because you might have thought, what's dvarim? The answer is no. Dvarim are real. They're real things. And you create, you fashion a davar with a dibur. How do you do that? How is it creative? Because the word, the spoken word, is actually the first concretization of an abstract idea that's in your mind. You want to make a proposal to someone. You have a business suggestion for them. You might have a great idea in your mind, but that is just in the koach, it's just in the potential. It's not in the actual. There's nothing concrete about it until you pick up the phone and you call them and you put it into words. Words create. So they are a davar.
If you can't get it out, that's a thing. If the thing can't get out of your head, it just stays in your head.
That's it. It's not a davar. Right. It only becomes a davar when you communicate it and you verbalize it with words. It goes from, in a certain sense, it goes from being purely spiritual, because that idea in your mind is ruchani. It's just an idea. It's very abstract. It's ethereal. And then when you speak it, now it becomes this worldly. People can record it. It can be used in all kinds of fashions, but that doesn't exist. Nothing happens until you say it, both on the negative side, God forbid, but certainly, of course, on the positive side. What happens at the Seder? At the night of the Seder, it is the night of creation. It's not the creation of the individual, because that's not going to happen until Rosh Hashanah. It's the creation of the nation of Am Yisrael. We go down with 70 people, and we become one nation. We were a clan, we were a family, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the four mothers. We had a big family, but we didn't have a nation. So on this night, we are using our words as the creative capacity to reenact and to relive the creation of the Jewish people. And so how are we going to create? Just like Hashem created the world with words, we're going to create our story at the Seder. That's number one. Words are creative. But there's another dimension to this. And if you look on the Sfas Emes, the Heilig Ger Rebbe, and number 7, he points out on the line in the Haggadah that says that we came down to Egypt, Vayered Mitzrayma, and the Medrash, the description that appears in the Midrashic tradition says, Onus al pi adibur. We were coerced by the word. What does that mean? So he quotes a Zohar HaKadosh in Parshas Va'era, in the underline, Shahadibur haya begalos b'Mitzrayim. The word, speech, was in exile. Interesting. What does that mean? So on the next page, you actually see this passage from the Zohar. It's quoted in an essay from Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, published in tradition, called Redemption, Prayer, and Talmud Torah, which we'll get to the beginning of in a second. But he puts the Zohar here, and he says, what does it mean when Moshe Rabbeinu said, the people won't listen to me, and I can't speak? You know why it is? It's not because I need speech therapy. It's not because I was born with a speech defect, although there is a beautiful Midrashic tradition about a coal. And says the Zohar, you know why it is? It's because when we're in exile, we can't speak. We're mute. What does that mean? We're mute when we're in exile. Says Rav Soloveitchik, turn to page 9. He says, what is redemption? Redemption involves a movement by an individual or a community from the periphery of history to its center. To be on the periphery means to be a non-history-making entity, while movement toward the center renders the same entity history-making and history-conscious. Naturally, the question arises, what is meant by a history-making people or a community? A communing, free existence. While a non-history-making, non-history-involved group leads a non-communing and therefore a silent, unfree existence. A free person has an identity. They have a story to tell. They have a past, they have a present, they have a future, they have dreams, they have roots. But a slave doesn't have that. Go to the next page. Redemption, we have stated, is identical with communing or with revelation of the word, the emergence of speech. Go to the next paragraph. The slave lives in silence. If such a meaningless existence may be called life, he has no message to deliver. In contrast with the slave, the free man bears a message, has a good deal to tell, and is eager to convey his life story to anyone who cares to listen. No wonder the Torah has 4 times emphasized the duty of the father, a liberated slave, to tell his children, born into freedom, the story of his liberation. Free man who is eager to tell his story is always surrounded by an audience willing to listen to his story. The slave has neither a story nor a curious audience. Moreover, he is not merely a speechless being, but a mute being, devoid not only of the word, but of the meaningful sound as well. Says Rav Soloveitchik, that's what the Zohar is saying. Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we're in exile. We don't have a story to tell. We don't have an identity. And Hashem says to him, now you do. Mi sam pel adam, who gives the ability, a story to man, I give it. So I am going to give you a story, an identity. And that's what you're going to tell. So v'yigara talabincha, you know why we use so much speech at the Seder? It's because we all of a sudden now have something to say. We have an identity. We have a story. And so it's going to be crucial that we use our words to tell that story. That's what we're telling the next generation, that we have a narrative, a divine narrative. We were slaves. God took us out. He brought us to Sinai. He brought us to Israel. That's the blueprint of our history. We're going to come back to that one day too. So reason number one that we use words is because words create. So they create the reenactment of becoming a nation. But number two is that words are the vehicle to share a story and to express an identity. It's true on a national level, and it's also true on a personal level. Each one of us has a unique story as part of our Mesorah. We're going to convey that to our children. Where do we come from? Where do our teachers come from? What's our family history? And that's why so often we use some of the same games and the same stories and the same shtiklach every year so that it becomes part of our tradition, because that's our identity. And those are the words that we're going to use. And now we know why Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't speak. It's not because he needed therapy. It's because he was mute because of the exile. There was no story. But that goes away. Once they leave Egypt, once they get their mission statement at Sinai, so the Yalkut Shimoni says, of course he could speak fine. Because they're not in exile anymore.
Did he have a speech impediment? So the Kol thing is not real.
So there are different traditions. It's not to say whether he did or he didn't. There are multiple ways of interpreting it. He says in the verse that he had a heavy speech. So we can interpret that in different ways. It could be interpreted physically, could be homiletical. This is kind of like a merging of the two. It could be that it was physical that was drawn from a deeper spiritual place. But the third suggestion that we can offer about the nature of speech and why it's so central to the Haggadah is because words create connections. Words build bridges between people. It doesn't say in the Chumash that the mitzvah is v'dibarta lebanecha, or even v'amarta. It says v'higadata. And I love this famous Hasidic saying, that the word v'higadata comes from the word gid, like gid hanashe, connective tissue, like a sinew. The point of v'higadata is to create a connection between generations, between people at the Seder. It's not about giving a lecture, it's about words that connect. So therefore, there's a listening part. We listen when the kids ask the Manishtana, and then we tell them with our words. But the words that we're using are not a soliloquy. They're not a monologue. They're a point of connection. They're a dialogue. Words build relationships. And I wonder, and some of these sources, as I was thinking about this, I reached out to my colleague and friend, Rabbi Eli Michel from Livingston. So he shared with me some beautiful, I'll share with you this piece from a book that he found, share with me some beautiful ideas. But I was wondering, when I was thinking about it with him, if this maybe can explain a very interesting passage in the Rambam in page 11. Very, very interesting passage, because the Rambam and hundreds of pages of ink have been written. Spilled ink over this Rambam is very complicated. The Rambam said at the beginning of Hilchos Tshuva, of all places, he doesn't say there's a mitzvah to do tshuva. He says, when you do tshuva, when a person, God forbid, makes a mistake, kishayasa tshuva v'yasha mecheto, what does the Rambam say is our obligation in the underline? Perak aleph halacha aleph, chayav lehisvados lefnei hakel baruch hu. A person is obligated to verbally declare their wrongdoing, vidui, lefnei hakel baruch hu, before the Blessed One, the Holy One Himself. Can I ask you a question? Forgetting about why the Rambam doesn't say there's a mitzvah to do tshuva, clearly, why the Rambam says that vidui is the mitzvah, I want to understand. Everything that I do is before God, isn't it? God is omniscient. So what does it mean when a person says vidui? You have to say vidui before God. Of course, everything he does is before God. I eat matzah before God also. But if tshuva is about returning and repairing a relationship, you know what happens in the relationships in our house when I make a mistake? It's not just enough to go over to my wife when I make a mistake and say, yep, yep. It won't get me very far. I have to look her in the eye and say, I'm sorry, I did such and such, and I'm not going to do it again. And by doing that, we actually build a connection. You build a relationship. So maybe what the Rambam is saying is that when you come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have to kivyachol, you have to look him in the eye. And you have to use words, and therefore it's not enough. You could be Mahara B'tshuva, and that is a level, but that's not the mitzvah. Because the mitzvah is you need to use words, because it is through words. Kechui machem dvarim, take words. Say those words. V'shuvu el Hashem. Words build connections. And that's this very interesting book. Joseph Epstein wrote this book called Friendship. On the next page, the subject of friendship involves much discourse about loyalty, trust, intimacy, confession, soulfulness, betrayal, and other large and high-flying matters. But look at the second paragraph. At the end, the heart of most friendships is something simpler. And what is that? Talk. Talk. That's what we're going to do with the Seder. We're just going to talk. We're not going to talk at people. We're going to talk with them. V'higadata l'bincha. We're going to build connection through our speech. There's a guy by the name of Jackson Brown, H. Jackson Brown. I don't know if you've ever seen this. You'll excuse me. I saw this in my sister-in-law and brother-in-law in their bathroom. They have those little books, you know, life's interesting things. So people, you know, so this guy, Jackson Brown, has written a zillion of them. So he has like pithy statements in there. Wisdom. You get wisdom wherever you find it. You can't take a Gemara into the restroom. So he has a line. He says, never underestimate the power of words to heal and reconcile relationships.
It's also a pasuk in the God where words don't apply, but it says, Chayev Adam Lirasis Atzmoi.
Yes.
Mitzrayim. I mean, that is imagination. That's,
yes.
That's, you have to put yourself into such a situation, but there are no words required of them.
Oh, so you're pointing out that the experience of the Haggadah is supposed to be as if you're seeing yourself. But the question, and this the answer that we're trying to address, the issue that we want to suggest, is that according to the halacha, it's not enough just to imagine. The mitzvah is sipur, you got to speak it out. Because you could have said, why not? Just everyone sit down around the table and conjure it up in your mind. But that doesn't accomplish the three things that we talked about. It doesn't create, because it's not real, it's not concrete. It doesn't tell the story, doesn't have that narrative to bring us into the free world as people of the mission of bringing Hashem into the world, and it doesn't build relationships. That's a very isolated experience when it's in your own mind. And the power of that story is so profound. And the vehicle that is the Haggadah and the Seder can really change our lives. I'll close with this amazing story, which I Xerox for you because you have to take it. It's mamish incredible. There's this woman, her name is Deborah Tannen. She's a professor. You know, you've heard of her, Jay?
Yeah.
She writes about language and speech and communication. So she tells this amazing story about her aunt. She said, my great aunt had a love affair when she was in her 70s. Obese, balding, her hands and legs misshapen by arthritis. She did not fit the stereotype of a woman romantically loved. But she was. By a man also in his 70s who lived in a nursing home but occasionally spent weekends with her in her apartment. In trying to tell me what this relationship meant to her, my aunt told of a conversation. One evening, she had dinner at the home of friends. When she returned to her home that evening, her man friend called. In the course of their conversation, he asked her, what did you wear? When she told me this, she began to cry. Do you know how many years it's been since anyone asked me what I wore? You see the connection that is built between two people through words. You see the Rav's description of going from slavery to freedom, to going from anonymity, living on the periphery of existence, to being a free person, for someone to tell a story to. And even if that story is, what did I wear tonight? And you see the power of creation. This is literally creating a world for someone. And so I think, as we wrap this up and think about how it's going to apply to our Seder, I think it's something that we can reflect on in our own lives in terms of the power of speech. The power of speech at the Seder, how am I going to use my words? And sometimes words are challenging at the Seder, because sometimes there are kids and grandchildren and grandparents and everybody's all over the place. There's tension. But we have to step back and say, well, how do I want to use my words? Because the words that I'm going to have now are going to make a big difference. The people at my Seder, I'm going to make or break it for them based on the words that I choose. But it's not just at the Seder. The Seder, which is the night of words, is the springboard for the whole year. It's how we think about our Jewish life, especially in a national context. As B'nai Chorin, as free people, that's something that's going to happen every day. So thinking about the power of speech at the Seder, this special night, this V'higadata L'bincha, and really immersing ourselves in that capacity and thinking about these frames, that can carry us for the rest of the year. We started with the question, why is it that everybody wants to write a Haggadah? It's because everybody recognized that these words are so powerful. These words create a connection, and a connection through generations. That connection through generations, you're going to have the same Haggadah with commentaries from every corner of the earth, because everybody wants their words to be a part of this story. The story that creates, the story that shapes and narrates our identity, and a story that builds relationships. And hopefully, we can do the same at our Seder. So thank you all for listening. We can bench in time without being late.